Tim Livingston.
Emotional security is like the blanket that you tuck your soul in.
Pete Livingston.
You ready for Joe Buck to set you up? Yeah. That's what I think he's saying. He's like, hey, you're about to sleep with Joe Buck.
And Sam.
This is our candy orchestra.
It's still going. Those are some good pop rocks.
Los Livingston Brothers.
Take five.
Yes.
Quiet on the set. Baba.
Baba.
Welcome. Glad that you are here. We are joined in studio. Special guest, my daughter, Aurora Lee Livingston.
Hi, Rory. Rory, what does the sheep say? Okay, she's not there yet.
She's like,
It's 12, 13, 14, which is one of those mathematical, calendarial, I think is the right horrible use of adverb, whatever it is, to say that it's a weird looking day on the calendar.
But people like that.
People like that, because if you like math, like I like math.
I like math.
If you like math, then you like that. Baba, can I have that? No? Okay, you can have it. So, we're out here in Pete's man cave.
It's been a while since we've done a show.
It's show number 176.
Okay.
So, that's good. So, what's interesting is, right now, 3,000 miles away, a somewhat useful collegiate award is being given away.
What award is that, Tim?
That would be the Heisman Trophy.
The German car award.
Yes, exactly. Given by Audi and Volkswagen.
Deutschland.
Presented by BMW.
There you go.
So there are three gentlemen up for the award. One is Marcus Mariota. He is a quarterback from the University of Oregon. You have...
From the Northwest. Very talented individual.
You have a wide receiver named Amani Cooper.
From Oklahoma?
From the University of Alabama.
Alabama.
He of the preordained hand raises by one incredible offensive genius that sucks at being a head coach, Lane Kiffin.
Is there? Well, hang on. Continue.
And then there's a running back from Wisconsin whose name I'm forgetting, and I feel like a jackass for forgetting his name. So just call me a jackass right now because I forgot his name.
Good to know.
Three. But he set a record for the most rushing.
What's wrong with being an amazing coordinator? Why do you think?
Right.
Why do you think people, as coaches, well, I could right off the bat give you a few answers. Why do you think it is that nobody is just like, hey, I am the best offensive coordinator. I don't need to be a head coach.
Because the goal of any coach is to be a head coach. They want to run the show. But Lane Kiffin has now been given two opportunities, and he's failed both times.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, though, this can change. If Nick Saban goes and wins his sixth national championship this upcoming season,
yes,
one of the things that will be interesting is how long is it going to be for Nick Saban to stay with Alabama?
Why would he leave? Is it just...
Just retire. He's not going to leave Alabama at all for any other job in the country. Alabama is the best coaching job in college football. And it's not even really close, to be honest with you. I know there are great SEC jobs, or you have the Notre Dame job, or the USC job, or your Oklahoma's, or your Texas, right? Florida State. But Alabama is the top of the mountain. And it's like not even close. Really not even remotely close. He's not going to leave. There's no way he'll leave. And the only way he does leave is if he retires. And if he retires, would you like to guess who's probably going to be the first in line?
Who?
Lane Kiffin.
Why?
Because of what he's done with that offense. Alabama, for the longest time, has been such a defensive-oriented school that now all of a sudden they have this offensive guru.
Rory does not agree with you.
Rory's like, no, I'm slamming down this bottle cap.
She just threw a bottle cap.
She's like, yeah. If I could, I'd pour this water on you. That's what she's doing right now. But it's true. Like, Alabama's always had the great defense, but now they got the good offense. But the reason why Nick Saban is great is because, you know, he's not afraid to delegate. Mm-hmm. And not afraid to run a program in a way that befits fitting people in the right spots. It's like your Belichick's or your, sure, you know, your quarter, your coaches like that. And Kiffin fits. Kiffin's a perfect fit. It's a high profile position. He's
wait, almost he's a perfect fit as a head coach?
As a coordinator.
Oh, of course.
In his system. He's almost, I think they call him an associate head coach. If you look at his official title, I think
if you're a coordinator, in your own way, you basically are. You're the head coach of an entire division of the ball.
So yeah, Saban doesn't care about offense. He's like, that's all you, Lane. Lane, you're calling all that.
Baba.
Fine.
Well, I don't know. There it is! Hooray! Who do you think wins it?
Mariota. Mariota's.
Sounds like he's a front runner.
The reason is because he's a quarterback. And I'm sitting there going like, hi. Baba. You got my water bottle. But it's just like, I don't understand why all of a sudden he's a front runner. I know why, but it's pretty obvious that that's a system. He's a system quarterback. I mean, he's not. It's not that he's a bad quarterback,
mm-hmm.
but he is a system quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Amani Cooper put up seriously probably the best single wide receiver season probably since Crabtree in 09 or 08 with Texas Tech. And I mean, there was no one more dominant. And he's gonna win. He won the Biletnikoff Award, and
of course. You know,
but Mariota, because he's the quarterback on Oregon, it's like, oh yeah, he's the man. But it's just, I know he's going to win it. But I think it's if you wanted to tell me who you're going to pick in the draft,
uh-huh.
Amari Cooper over Mariota.
I see that. Where do you see Mariota going in the draft?
He'll be a top 10 or top 15 pick.
Really
good arm strength, good athlete out of the pocket. He's not. He's definitely not undersized.
Can you do Mel Kiper Jr.?
No, I can't. Mel Kiper Jr.
He's got great arm strength. Great out of the pocket. What is
it? Here's a guy six. I can't do it.
That was Ditka.
Yeah, that was too Ditka. I can't do it. Kiper's got a weird accent.
I could do Kiper.
Like, okay, go ahead.
No. I'm just saying. I could do if you gave me a little bit of time. I could do
Kiper. Oh yeah, I'd have to study him. Yeah, like Dickie B, baby. Hey, college basketball started up. Are you ready? Kentucky, number one in the country.
They just played North Carolina.
Yes, they did. You know who's actually really good and like really good at college basketball? University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Wayne Kaminsky is like shooting threes at 7 feet, and then he's driving and dunking too. He's a lottery pick.
Of course.
He's like Nisei Dirk Nowitzki, man. He's got a chance of being like not as good a 3-point shooter as Dirk Nowitzki.
Speaking of Dirk Nowitzki, the Warriors actually just
throttled him. And that's like the score was like by 8 they won or something like that. No. But they were up by 19 at the end of 4.
They were, yeah. It was like a 20 something point game at
28 half-time. At one point, 21 at 22 at half. Yeah, that was just demolishing. And everybody's less like, they're like in awe, but it was so great. So we were watching Slapshot earlier today, you know, phenomenal movie. And my dad was wanting to see, oh, the Warriors are on. Let's turn it over and see how they're doing. We flipped it over. It was 52-29 in the second quarter. And dad was like, oh, they got Bogut. And he's like, that's going to be tough. And I busted up laughing when I saw the score. I mean, they're just, they're something else. And you know what, too? Is that if you're a fan of just good basketball, God, they play good basketball. I mean, they're so good in every facet of the game. It's just remarkable. Ball movement, cutting through lanes, shooting, defense, switching, transition. They're just incredible. Every phase of the game, They are amongst the best, if not the best, in all of basketball. And that's why they're 20-2.
Do you think they're going to the finals?
I mean, if they're playing like this, who's going to beat them? I mean, seriously, who's going to beat them? I think the only way they lose is if they beat themselves. They have to beat themselves. And I think that Steve Kerr has them working out the kinks in a way that they can... Baba's disagreeing with me. But they're doing it in a way that's like, oh, they're working out the kinks, but they're still awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
Hang on 1 second. Mama!
Yay!
Ma! Chels! I think Baba needs to go in. Okay. She's yawning.
Oh, I didn't see that. Her head was turned. That was a break in the action here.
Yay! Mama!
Maybe it is time for your nap.
She was on a podcast. She was just disagreeing with Tim on something.
Yes, she was.
Yay! Mama's here! Hooray!
You paused your podcast?
No, we're still going.
We can cut.
What's your take on the Warriors, Chelsea?
Oh, here, by the way.
Can they make it to the championship?
I'm going to go with yes, because I think that's what you want to hear.
Okay. Good enough. That's our goodbye special guest, Baba.
Bye, Baba.
She's so cute. You guys, you can't see this, but she's wearing this adorable...
Sorry.
This adorable polka-dotted onesie with little bears on it.
Yeah, I'm blooming.
It's got a pocket, too.
Hey! She's, like, waving. Hey! good of her to stop by.
Very good. She's tough to get a hold of. Her people are very tough to get a hold of.
She has a tight schedule.
She does. No, she is. She's hard to get a hold of, man. So, what you were saying about the Warriors?
They're good at basketball.
They are.
One thing we added to the studio.
Oh, yeah.
Great. It was my birthday. My birthday happened.
Pete is now 21 years old.
Now 21.
Yeah.
And we have in studio... Next to our microphone station and our open sign, we have... Tim is actually resting arm on said birthday gift, which... Actually, we have the refrigerator plugged in.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So that's the... You did get some more plugged
But it is. It's a... it's an awesome mini fridge.
Yes, it is.
And what's also awesome is what Tim provided... For inside,
well, actually, that was your lovely wife.
Oh,
she knew exactly. She knew.
I thought that was your doing.
No, that was her. Like when I heard it, I was like, "Oh, you."
I thought it was because that's a Tim Livingston.
Oh no, that's Tim Livingston's favorite beer.
That's when we are talking shameless plug.
Sierra Nevada. You know the head brewer at Sierra Nevada was on
Andrew Davis. Talk to him later.
Was on the Steve Austin show.
No way.
Because you know what Steve Austin's favorite beer is? Torpedo.
Are you serious?
No shit. No shit.
Steve Austin
is
throwing a gigantic curveball at all fans of Steve Austin.
Right, like, oh, Bud Light,
yeah.
Coors Light. No. No.
Sierra Nevada.
Well, he did. No, it was so funny, like, because I went back and listened to his podcast. We'll get back to Pete's version in a second. But, you know, you're going through his podcast, and he'd always talk about how he'd get, like, Tom's like, he's like, yo, you gotta try this beer. And in Texas, you have restaurants or liquor stores you can actually drive through. You have drive-through liquor stores there.
Yes.
And there's a couple places that Steve would go to, like, on his way to his ranch, which is in South Texas. It's about an hour or so outside of San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about how... He went one time, and the guy there at the store, he said, you should recommend me something. What do you think? And he told him about Torpedo. And he loved it. And he kept talking about it. And we got cut off there for a second. But basically, I guess word got back to the Brewers at Sierra Nevada that he loved it, and he asked him to come on, and the guy from Sierra was like, yeah, I can't remember his name. I have it on my phone. But yeah, so pretty awesome development from the house of Stone Cold Steve Austin there.
Very nice.
But yeah, really good stuff. I actually have it, and it's... I don't have it on here. Boo! All right, it's on my computer then. But it was awesome. And I haven't listened to it yet, but I have it on my list of podcasts to listen to.
Very nice.
But you have a different Sierra Nevada beer in your fridge.
The Tim Livingston beer choice.
Yeah.
Well, is it the...
Yeah. I mean, I'm anything what they call wet hop or fresh hops. So people don't know the brewing process. And this is something Elliot talked about at your daughter's baptism this past weekend.
Bat mitzvah.
Was that last year, Lagunitas came up with this thing called Yakima Wet Hop, where they actually went up to Yakima, Washington, got the hops, and the same day came back to Petaluma and made the beer.
Mm.
So the idea with fresh hops is that as soon as they're grown, they're in the beer. And the idea behind it is that it's supposed to be kind of a, like, almost a sweeter taste to an extent, but it's a much more mellower taste. And it makes a lot of the beers that are popular around here that are kind of on the more bitter, not the more bitter side, but the less smooth side. It brings out this kind of richness to it. And it's an incredible taste. But Celebration Ale was made almost, I think, 20, 25 years ago now. And that was Sierra Nevada's idea, was wet hops in a beer. And the first time I had it, I've always looked for beers that are like that. And then I realized, I think it was last year or the year before, it's a wet hop beer.
Mm.
So anything, if anybody's looking for a beer recommendation, for me, anything that's a wet hop or a fresh hop, they call it, whatever.
Or hip hop?
Or hip hop, I will drink that. I would drink that. Long and hard. So...
I think that I need to develop the hip-hop.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Work with, like, Lagunitas or Russian River.
And, like, E-40.
He does wine.
I know.
He's got Mango Moscato waiting for you.
Ooh.
Goodness.
Dirty.
Oh, God.
You know what? I'll take a holiday.
Yeah, that kid.
Haven't had one since my birthday.
Wow. We have a big stock full of them, so.
Yeah, we did.
And this stuff goes fast.
We didn't exactly make a huge dent.
No. Oh, do you not have one right here? Because I don't have one on my keychain.
No. Well.
No. I don't know the trick like Tyler does. Can you use the cover?
No.
I'm sorry.
You can hand me another one. I'll do it.
Okay.
I'll do a trick.
Pete, you got a mini fridge for your
birthday. Yeah, I do. And Steve Austin, wrestler. Entertainer, podcaster, also a rancher.
Yeah.
And
Hunter.
You know who else is a wrestler?
Who?
CM Punk.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be kind of a wrestling-centric show because what's happened in like the last 3 weeks has been remarkable.
Like what?
So CM Punk, back on November, on Thanksgiving night, or by midnight going into Thanksgiving, all of a sudden shows up on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling podcast.
Okay.
And it's a big deal because Punk, since leaving the night after the Royal Rumble, has been silent about what he's wanting to do. And there's a lot of anticipation of who's going to get his first interview, and of course he does it with his best friend. And so he goes on a pretty scathing interview of the WWE and his practices and him feeling cheated, and the kind of the biggest one out of it was that he wrestled with what he thought was a cyst that turned out to be a staph infection for 3 months.
Mm.
And that when he first got it treated by a doctor outside of the WWE, the guy told him, like, you should not be living right now. That's how bad it was. But he didn't have good things to say, that he felt that he was being overworked. And it got to the point where he was just like, I'm tired of beating myself up for this. So that happens, and then you have the responses by everybody. And then the next Monday, Stone Cold Steve Austin does a podcast with Vince McMahon. And the first thing they talk about is, of course, the Punk podcast. You know, and Vince basically says that, you know, he was unaware. Oh, the other big thing that happened was that on CM Punk's wedding day, his termination papers were given to him by WWE.
Did we talk about that on here?
No, because we haven't had a show since that.
We've talked about
this. We've talked about this, though.
Who did we talk?
I don't know who we talked about it with. But yeah, it was a show.
Your shirt wasn't on the show.
Yeah, because I haven't put up a show lately. But, and so Vince was like, I wasn't aware of that. And he basically said that it was Triple H. And Triple H and CM Punk had never got along, really. They were just, you know, Punk wasn't a big, you know, fan of how Trips did business and things like that. And so they had heat with each other. And Triple H was pissed. He was totally pissed about everything. Fast forward the next week, Punk comes on again, but doesn't really say much. A week after that, UFC 181, CM Punk shows up and announces that he's going to fight for UFC. So then all of a sudden things get put into place, and it's like, oh, so that's why. So he took what he got from Cabana's podcast, the Vince McMahon thing, turned it into that. So Punk's going to be in UFC next year. And he already becomes their biggest draw.
Yeah.
And it's not even close. Fast forward to this past Thursday. WWE has this brand developmental, whatever you want to call it, called NXT. And every 3 months they do a week, like a special.
NXT's been around a while.
It's been around a while, but it's kind of been the centerpiece of the WWE network in the sense that they have had it as an internet-only show for a little while, and it was a big deal. And people liked it because you got to see the young guys who were hungry coming up.
Yeah, it's a celebration.
Yeah. That's a plug. But what's happened is that with what's been going on with Raw and SmackDown, there's two different entities there. So Raw and SmackDown are produced by a whole bunch of different people, and then NXT is run by Triple H and a couple of other people. And Dusty Rhodes has been kind of an on and off.
Is that NXT? That's the thing they got Sting and like Jeff Jarrett.
That's TNA.
Oh.
That's different.
Okay.
NXT was originally conceived as a show where up and coming wrestlers would be paired with established wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that happened for a couple of seasons, they transitioned it into just the show for the next generation. And so guys like Seth Rollins and Big E Langston, Bo Dallas, these guys who had runs there,
Bo Derek,
Frank, the 10, ended up getting their run. But what's happened is, over the last 2 years, I'd say, a year and a half, 2 years, NXT has become the best thing that WWE has produced. And a lot of it's because it's simple. They run it on a weekly basis, only an hour. It's not 3 hours like Raw or 2 hours like SmackDown.
Raw's 3 hours.
Raw's 3 hours.
And that's insane.
And so they basically have it where they'll do 3 TV tapings a night for 3 weeks. So it's a 3-hour live show.
Uh-huh.
But they basically have those guys work that night.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll go back, do some stuff in developmental, kind of look at the tape, and so on. And so it's this really neat format that allows the guys to get on TV, see what works well, come back with improvements, right? And so this past Thursday was NXT TakeOver R Evolution. TakeOver is the name of all these specials that's happened since the WWE Network came out. And it was probably the first show that the WWE has had that focused on independent talent that they brought in. Not guys that they themselves developed,
mm-hmm.
but guys who were big independent stars that, or from Japan or England or what have you, that were the focal point of this show.
Mm.
And the big story arc was Sami Zayn used to be El Generico, really over, pure white bread baby face that's like Ricky Steamboat-esque. you know, he finally ascends after missing out on so many opportunities to win the NXT Championship. He beats his friend Adrian Neville for the championship. And Kevin Steen, going by Kevin Owens, which is off of his son's name, comes in and he debuts, and it's a great debut. He comes in and he just destroys CJ Parker. And they've been best friends for over a decade. Like, they came up in Montreal together. They've wrestled all over the world together. And they do this great angle at the end of it where Zayn wins. Steen's the first, you know, Owens is the first guy out there to hug him. Everybody's cheering. Pat Patterson, who was the greatest wrestler ever from Montreal, depending on who you talk to, he was in the ring celebrating. So you got this great lineage of Montreal from the 60s and 70s all the way down to the 2000s, to the current generation, right?
Yeah.
And then they show, you know, the little copyright, and but they keep the cameras on, and about a minute after that happens, Owen slams Zayn into the steel ramp and then powerbombs him against the apron. And it was just like, it was so well done. And it was the best 2 hours that WWE produced all year long. And this is with WrestleMania with Daniel Bryan winning the damn title. This is with Elimination Chamber with the people calling the best match all year between the Shield and the Wyatt family.
Is that saying much, though?
That's the thing. It's like, it's great. Comparative to other eras of wrestling, it would have right there been amongst the good stuff. But it's so much better. Like, this was eons better than anything else WWE has put out this year. That you're just sitting there going, like, how does this exist? And then how does Raw and SmackDown exist?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because Triple H has kind of the role there as he runs that show. He likes, and he's a guy who studied under Dusty and Flair. These guys who really keep things tight. There's, you know, there's volatility. Whereas,
well, let me, I think you're thinking about it wrong. If you think about it from the WWE,
mm-hmm.
who does Raw cater to?
Right, and that's the thing. So WWE Network more of a hardcore audience. WWE Raw and SmackDown is trying to cater to a broader audience.
I think of it as more for the kids.
And that's the thing.
And then this is for the savvy,
right,
wrestling aficionados,
yeah, right,
who need their, because kids only like names,
right,
for the most part,
right.
You're not going to
John Cena.
You're not going to an 8 year old, a 9 year old is not going to know this up and coming. They don't care about that.
Right.
They want to see the established name.
And this is.
And it's funny to even bring this up because I swear, like, a few days ago, I was really, I may have been a little bored, but I was actually going through the timeline of late 80s WWE, WCW, kind of my personal fallout with wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and that I kind of just, I got over it a little bit, and then I remember coming in, I think I was walking past your room, and you're going crazy, because you always go crazy when you watch wrestling. And I was like, what are you watching, Tim? And you were saying, it's ECW. And I was like, what's ECW? And you're telling me about it.
Yeah. This was when it was on TNN.
This was like
98, 99.
It may not even have been on, or could have been on
TNN. Yeah, that's the first time I watched ECW. I wasn't buying tapes of them or anything like that, so...
And I was really almost not involved at all. And you were like, well, this is ECW. And this is what it is. It's these guys. This is this guy. And I was like, I've never even heard of that person. Yeah. I don't even know who any of you are. Sabu, yeah. Sandman, had no idea. And you're like, yeah, you should check it out. It's pretty cool. And I sat down from the bed and I was watching it with you. And I just remember the first thing I noticed was, this is a completely different animal. The energy is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
The fans are ultra involved. They're highly intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
They give good pop. I mean, it was like the fans that would applaud like a good...
Right, the exchange is the Indies.
Just, I mean, I was just saying, like, this is so crazy. And, of course, it was very gritty and grimy and
you know, right. They did the barbed wire matches, yeah. And no, that was very in your face, and
yeah. Now
it doesn't sound like this is like Eastern.
No.
But it sounds like it's like, but if you're an intelligent wrestling fan,
right,
this is what you will watch.
But I think the thing that is most telling about this is that it's under the same umbrella as the WWE, right? And you're seeing, like, on this show, you had Kevin Owens, you had Kalisto, who was Samurai Del Sol, you had Kenta, Hideo Itami, you had Fergal Devitt, who was Finn Balor, you had Sami Zayn, who was El Generico, and you had Adrian Neville, who was Pac. They're the centerpieces, and then, you know, Kevin Steen, Kevin Owens, they're the centerpieces now of NXT, and those guys were all independent talent. They weren't WWE bred. They weren't guys who came up right away. Oh, and then you had the women's match between Charlotte and Sasha Banks. That was really good.
How do people feel about the WCW still like cherry picking?
Well, that's talent. And so that's the thing. It's like they cherry picked a lot of guys from ECW. WWE did a little bit, but they really did that earlier on, and then they had a talent exchange with Too Cold Scorpio.
Yes!
Which was awesome. Although WWF, you know, fucked that up.
So, here's the thing.
Right.
You say that they F it up. Well, they do.
Right.
But it almost, when they would acquire or absorb other companies and talent, it almost seemed like, barring, the only two guys I really remember them acquiring and really pushing them and like showing their full capabilities, mm-hmm. was when Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit came.
Right, and then Malenko.
Yeah, and Dean Malenko.
And Pyro Saturn, right.
Those were, well, Saturn kind of...
Yeah, he did the knock-loopy angle, which is...
But those three guys, it felt like were used to the best capabilities. Whereas, I remember they would bring in other talent, and then it was almost like they were liquidating.
It was.
It was like they brought in these guys, they didn't even use them right, and then you just never saw them.
It was the next year, yeah. The next year, I mean, everyone basically except for Rob Van Dam and Booker T were liquidated.
That's true. Right. Rob Van Dam,
yeah.
He went over well.
Yeah, well, that was, he was the guy that stayed loyal to ECW. But when he made his run in 97 with WWF...
I thought it was later.
It was...
I thought it was like 2000.
Oh, no. He came back and was permanent, like, in 2001. But when he was with WWF... Like, when he was with ECW, he was obviously the guy that... He was the guy who was like, oh, is he going to go there or is he going to go to WCW? Mm-hmm. And then when he went to WWE after the whole invasion...
Rob Van Dam was sick in ECW.
He was. And he was completely unique. And he had an awesome look. And he had really over spots. And he was for that time period, he was one of those guys where you're like, I want to see him.
And he had great feuds.
Yeah, he did. He had the Jerry Lynn feud, and he had the Rhino feud, and Sabu.
Yeah,
Sabu.
Best feud, you would probably know more because you saw more of it from probably, I probably saw about a year and a half, 2 years. Not completely devoted, but I would watch ECW. Like, I remember if you had that on, just because the energy was so crazy, I would watch that because it was hype.
Well, I have some ECW for you.
Like,
if you were to
like
watch
it was hype. But yeah. That was, remember we were doing like the 3D thing?
Oh, yeah.
3D was nuts.
Oh, yeah.
But 3D.
Dudley Boys are crazy, man.
Nobody.
Oh, yeah, the Dudley Boys got over. What the fuck am I talking about? The Dudley Boys got totally over.
When they would do 3D,
It was the
place would go nuts.
It was one of the most over moves. And the great thing, it was protected. No one kicked out of it, right? No, it was great.
But I totally forgot what I was going to say because I started thinking about 3D. What were we talking about?
Well, I wanted to kind of wrap that thing up with a bow with NXT. So if you can think about it, go ahead. But
you go for it.
So here's what happened, right? So.
You're talking about Rob Van Dam.
Dude. Yeah.
And now he was back with ECW.
Right. And people were waiting, like, is he going to go to WWF? Like, he was super hot. Like, he was ECW at that time. He was the face of ECW, yeah. Like, without a question.
He was so over that the TV title was almost more important than the world title.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember, just, and then we can go off on this tangent later, but just something to think about, favorite feud at ECW. I love Sabu and Sandman.
Yeah.
Didn't they have a feud?
No, it was, no, Sabu had...
No, it was, no, what was his,
Raven and Sandman.
No, not Raven, it was Sandman. Who's the guy that, like, had, like, the broken neck or whatever? And it took his woman.
Oh, that's Shane Douglas and Pitbull. That's what that one was. The guy with the neck halo?
Oh, I can't remember. He wore like black pants. Like, you know how Sandman wore like the...
Oh, Rhino.
Was that the guy's name?
Yeah.
No, Rhino was a big dude.
Well, Rhino was
with the hair.
Yeah, he was power driving full suit tables. Oh, God. You have to think about that. But this is so Triple H. So this is how fickle wrestling fans can be, which is really hilarious. So, and myself included, because what the fuck do I know? So, once that aired, once TakeOver aired, like, it trended on Facebook.
Mm.
Alright? It fucking trended
on... This guy!
Oh, Tommy Dreamer.
Tommy Dreamer!
Oh, yeah, Sandman and Tommy Dreamer. That's awesome. That's a great feud. That's a great feud. That's what made Tommy Dreamer.
Sandman and Tommy Dreamer.
Yeah, that's what made Tommy Dreamer.
That was awesome.
That was a great feud.
That was a freaking adult feud.
Yeah, that was phenomenal. But so that came out, and it was trending on Facebook, Twitter, and everybody was going crazy. So the Reddit r/Circle, which is the wrestling Reddit, they got together and somehow cobbled the money to send Triple H a fruit basket to the Stamford, Connecticut offices.
Why?
Because of how much they loved that. Because they were waiting for something like that. Because it was everything that these hardcore fans loved. And then Triple H actually posted it on Twitter.
Mm.
It's like, I'm sorry I couldn't be there to receive this, but he was down in Florida still because they were taping TV. Because
he was filming low-budget porn.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so funny to think that after the CM Punk interview, the Triple H is, like, demonized.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 weeks later, Triple H is like, well, what did I just do? And that's the truth. It's like, so...
Where do you think the truth lies? Or do you think, like, there's a lot of truths? I feel like... After hearing so many things from wrestlers and reading so many things, and like you were saying, seeing what they also do in response, like Vince McMahon and Triple H and stuff like that, I think there are a lot of truths. I think they probably do treat people pretty crappy sometimes.
Right.
But then I also think that they also hit a few out of the park.
Yeah, well, and then that's the thing with the Punk stuff was that some of that stuff was stuff we either already knew from reports.
Do you think some of it is Punk?
But that's the thing, right? So there is some of it that's
like,
Punk.
Is there another side to that? Like,
no, I think...
Is he at fault for any of it?
I wouldn't say he's at fault, but I will say that there's things that when they keep building up and building up and building up,
uh-huh.
and the frustrations continue to build, you're going to feel slighted.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to feel to the point where now any mistakes going forward are magnified.
Yeah.
Punk said many times in the interview that he wanted to main event WrestleMania. And he was pissed off at the
Miz. Who main evented over him?
The Miz against John Cena with The Rock as the special guest referee or the host or whatever the hell he was. And then the next year, Punk faced Jericho after winning the title, had a great match, but he didn't go on last. It was the World Heavyweight title went on last. And
World Heavyweight title is supposed to be.
Well, the WWE title at that time was supposed to be higher, but I can't remember, right? He didn't go on last that year. I'm sorry, WrestleMania 28 was Cena and Rock going on last. And then when WrestleMania 29 came around, that's when the Royal Rumble happened, and Punk dropped the belt to Rock, and then Rock and Cena beat Rock with the belt and all that shit.
I always think it's so weird how they just, like... And I know why they do it, because they're big names, people love them, but I always find it so weird that they just bring in somebody.
And that was
Punk's point. Make him go over, and then, you know, they disappear again because they go do movies and
whatever. But that's Punk's point. And Punk...
Which is understandable.
Right. And Punk, then the breaking point was at the Royal Rumble, when he was fighting, and Batista was coming back that night. And so the original plan was Batista was going to go to WrestleMania and face Randy Orton for the title. And Punk was going to feud with Kane. Punk didn't like that.
Yeah.
And he voiced his displeasure with it. And it got to the point where he felt like, I've been wrestling hurt. I've done this for you. And he kept being told, yeah, well, you know, do this for us. And now, and he's like, well, this is the third time, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know what? I've fulfilled all the dates on my contract. I'm leaving, and that's it. And so he left. And here's the thing, and this is you know, when my first time I heard it, I was like, holy shit! Like, he came out and said a lot of stuff that was not sacrosanct, but I was like, oh, holy shit! This is some stuff that you don't normally hear. But all of a sudden, the days and weeks go by, and you think about it, it's like, well, he had a certain idea, they had a certain idea, and it didn't match up.
Yeah.
And so part of it was Punk. I would say it wasn't as much Punk as people would give him for because there's some people who just don't like him because he's an asshole or what have you. And I was like, I don't think it's so much Punk, but I think it's like, if he's done this, but he's not been raised to a certain level, and he goes out there and rips it up and all that stuff, and he still doesn't go out there, And he's not a quote-unquote top guy, it makes him feel like he's just, you know, he's being pushed over, or he's, you know, not as useful as people hope he would be. You know?
Yeah.
And so when that happens, then he gets frustrated, and little things add up, and then it just goes to mess things up even more, right? And so I think that part of it was Punk. I think there's there's no, and that's the thing, you can't find fault with just one side of it. But I just thought it was funny that all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, look, there's Punk was smart enough to use that as a stepping stone to the UFC pay-per-view. And he was smart about that. I don't fault him.
With UFC, you have to think, big draw.
Yep.
This will drag over. I granted that there's already some crossover between wrestling fans and UFC fans.
Yeah, a little bit.
But you know that Dana White is stoked that he's going to take a little small percentage of that pie. They're going to come over and watch CM Punk for his first match. Right. So this also sounds like CM Punk coming in right away with no MMA prior experience.
Not major experience. He's done training, but not major MMA intensive
training. Exactly. Well, not just training. Nobody just trains and then shows up to the UFC and says, hey, I'm going to fight in the UFC now. Yeah. It's not like that anymore. Right. It was at one point, I'm pretty sure, and not even that long ago.
Right.
But now there are Lord knows how many different independent places, and it's kind of like you have to get scouted in a way.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like the big gripe now is you have all the MMA guys saying, I want to fight Punk. Because it's kind of like Rock showing up, and they're just like, all right, you're going over for the title. We're slapping the belt on you. Congratulations. Right. Like, you're going to be the champion.
Yeah, so now it's the Brock Lesnar scenario.
Is he just going to get a pushover fight because...
Well, so that's the thing, that Dana has to walk that line, all right? So Dana can't set up. It's so weird. He has to set up a known commodity, right? He has to set up a known commodity, but it can't be a pushover known commodity because the fans are smart. Like, oh, Punk facing that guy, that's bullshit, right? So White's got why did Punk have to come?
But then Punk can't lose.
Right, so that's the thing. So,
because what if he goes out and then loses?
So that's the question. If it's a competitive fight and he loses, I don't think people are going to really have a kind of a...
True.
Right? It was kind of like when Brock lost to Frank Mir. Brock dominated the fight against Frank Mir, but a technicality allowed Brock to open up to the point where Frank was like, oh, if I can get that again, I know what I'm doing. He got the armbar and tapped out. There's a sense that if Punk lost competitively and wasn't overblown like some of the K1 fights and some of the Japanese pro wrestlers did when UFC, or not UFC, but MMA fights were a big deal on New Year's Eve, that happens, then all of a sudden they're like, okay, I want to see him again. Punk can't go in there and lose in 20 seconds in a way that's just completely
He has to get through the first round.
That, or it's got to be such a hectic first round. The thing is, though, that Punk has on its side is that he's already a white belt jiu-jitsu. So he's
white belt.
Yeah. So that's a mid rank, I think.
Oh, it's not like in karate where it's like white belt. It's different. Okay.
But he's got experience. But now he's got to figure out those guys.
Man, that's some good shit.
I fucking miss that bro so much. 10 years has been better. But yeah, I just feel like he's got an opportunity to be a draw.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And Brock came in as a world-class grappler. That was his thing. Was a world-class, like, if he decided he wanted to go to the Olympics, he could have gone to heavyweight and basically destroyed everybody. Like, that's how good of an amateur wrestler he was at the heavyweight level. And I think that Punk has an opportunity. Plus, he's fighting welterweight. He said he wants to fight 185.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is not light heavy. He's like, I guess I could go to 205, but he's like, I feel more comfortable at 185.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, he avoids Silva. He's in GSP left. So, I mean, I feel like he's got an opportunity to be good, but he's also 36.
Ooh.
He's smart enough. He's smart enough, though, that I think he knows that he wants to parlay this into some type of career. And to be honest, he's such a good talker that him as kind of like a secondary color guy, Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg being the first, but Punk being that second guy,
yeah,
he'd be great at it. And so I think that was brought up by Dave Meltzer about this whole thing when it happened.
Are you name dropping?
I am. No, I've never met Dave. Although he lives in fucking Campbell. I should fucking meet him one day.
Who is he?
Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, most popular and legendary wrestling newsletter of all time. Sorry.
Tim looked at me like he was going to just chop me in the throat.
I think even non-wrestling fans know to an extent who Meltzer is because of the Montreal Screwjob. Because the Wrestling Observer that came out right after that was
like, you're talking about
Vince and Hart. Like, it was so extensive that like people who picked up on it, major news outlets who picked up on it, they were quoting shit from the Observer. Like the Observer was being used in the New York Times. Or like what have you? They did a great article.
That was in the New York Times. Yeah, Bret Hart getting,
well, at some point it was in there. Yeah, but yeah, it's pretty great. So, but yeah, fucking, we spent half an hour talking about pro wrestling. That's crazy. It's really crazy. And the question is now, it's like, so what does WWE do now? Now that NXT is like, here's the thing: people are kind of getting
good. They don't change anything.
Yeah.
They keep doing Raw and SmackDown for the kids.
Fuck yeah, bring me NXT every week.
And then they'll keep NXT, whatever it is, they're gonna keep doing
it. I haven't watched Raw or SmackDown, I'd say a good 6 weeks, maybe 2 months.
No.
Like no shit. Like I turned it on, I think.
Well, you don't need to keep up on it. That's a good thing about it, is that it is. It's soap opera.
Yeah.
You just kinda hop in whenever you want.
Like TLC Sunday night, I don't have I'll probably watch it while I'm getting stuff ready for my finals, but I'm not going to be like, oh God, I got to watch it, you know? But holy shit, NXT got me pumped.
Yeah.
So, what else do we want to talk about?
I do want to applaud you, and I also want to applaud myself for remembering this, because I want to talk about it right before we started, right?
Well, thank you.
I wonder if we can find any of those shirts. Do you remember they sold those shirts on SummerSlam?
I want one of those Barry Horowitz shirts.
With the hand on the back?
Hell yeah.
Because he beat Sonny?
It'd be Skip.
Skip, yeah, excuse me. Yeah. Sonny's still looking good, by the way. Or but no?
Then she's got like 15 years of drugs in her.
Oh, no.
Bad.
Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
Sable?
No.
Mrs. Brock Lesnar?
I can't remember. I saw somebody and I was like, wow, they're still pretty hot.
Oh, Trish Stratus? She'd never not looked hot. So.
Yeah. So I made the joke about Triple H went on to Florida to do low budget porn.
Yeah.
The wrestling industry to me, it feels a lot like what the porn industry would be. Doesn't it? Does it not? It's kind of like weird, underground, dirty. Like,
oh no, it's totally kitschy. It's like really weird, off-brand culture.
Like the life is really weird.
Yeah.
Like, there's crazy drugs and steroids.
Not as much as it used to be, but yeah.
You know what I mean, though? It's just like, it feels...
Yeah.
No, I don't want to say like I don't
there is crossover there between his fan bases.
Well, yeah, no. But it kind of has a similar crazy feel to it.
Sure.
I don't know. Do you draw that, sure. Or is that just me?
That's probably you more than anyone.
I don't know.
I'll say there's some crossover there. There's some crossing of the swords there. Yeah.
You go on the boards, the forums. They probably.
There's a couple, probably. Probably.
Dude, message boards are crazy. Yeah. The SRK message boards, like...
I can't handle that.
There are some crazy people that...
By the way, shout out to Pro Wrestling Only and the Death Valley Driver video review message boards that I frequent on a regular basis.
Which you could probably be running Death Valley Driver.
Oh, hell no. Dean and Phil and Pete... And Rev Ray and all those fools, those guys will run that until they die. Alright? Dean is about to turn 50 years old. He started writing about wrestling almost 20 years ago. That's fucking ridiculous. You know how awesome that is? That is a living, breathing artifact of the internet. That's so crazy.
Well, you so wrote crazy. For them for years.
I didn't write for them. I wrote for 411 Main.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. 411 Main.
That's different. No, I fucking wish I wrote for Death Valley Driver. I'd be like a godfather of pro wrestling. I'd be a made man if I wrote for them.
Get up in there, man.
No, they don't write anymore. They don't do DVD VRs anymore.
No.
So it's sad. Those things.
I almost want to read your old ones.
Oh no, they're horrible. I actually like read them about. I want to say like a month or so ago.
Did you really?
That was so bad.
I just remember. I remember seeing you. So I remember watching bad. You write some of them sometimes, so and it was bad. Like. All caps with
so the tilde bang. That was a big like, thing at the time.
Is that
a Dean Rasmussen original?
Is that the squiggly line?
The tilde bang.
What is that? What was that used for?
I can't remember what it was used for originally.
But you used it all the time. Yeah, you used it so much.
It was a common internet trope for excitement or sarcastic excitement. And so, but yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and Dean. He was the first guy who did it.
You would do those, and you would do exclamation points.
Yeah, a lot of exclamation points. Tilde bang, exclamation point.
So when you wrote those, was it like you were writing it as the announcer?
No. I actually, you know what? I did kind of like that, because I did play-by-play type reviews for a while.
Yeah.
And then I did more like actual paragraph reviews, and I like those better.
I remember I just remember you doing... The ones I saw you do were matches. We do matches.
Yeah. I used to do columns for them and all that, but I'm writing now for the AP Party, which is a pop culture blog, and the Outside Corner, which are both a baseball blog. And those are under the Blogwin umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Great Joe Lucia, Ben Koo, giving me a chance to write Ian Castleberry. Wrote this week about Sonic Highways, the Foo Fighters HBO documentary series. Really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wrote about... what was the other thing I wrote for?
You should write about the crossover between porn and wrestling.
Yes, I wrote about that. What the fuck was it that I wrote about? There was the other thing I wrote for them. Oh, I'm sorry. I've been writing so much for
Christmas
them.
Vacation.
Christmas Vacation. But I wrote something else for them.
Obviously.
I did a review for Mockingbird Part 1. Mockingjay Part 1.
Well, there was something else, though. I'm pissed. I can't remember. There was another thing that I decided to review.
It must have sucked if you can't remember it.
Probably did.
You should bring back the squiggly lines.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
What was so bad about the stuff that you were up? I kind of want to read that.
Oh, it was just really like, back in like the 2000s, early 2000s, like being a smart fan was like one of those things where you really like, you want to show how smart you were.
You were kind of like an asshole.
Yeah, I was kind of like an asshole.
You were like a pseudo intellectual.
Yeah, pretty bullshitty. It was.
Or is that even being a pseudo intellectual? No, if you're pseudo intellectual, it's like you're trying to be more intelligent than you really are.
Yeah.
Or you are smart. I can't remember.
If you're pseudo intellectual, that means that you throw big. You are the guy who overextends yourself.
Okay. Unnecessarily
so. Yeah. Instead of being like, oh, you know, you could have just said that car is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of that automobile is of incredible mechanical beauty. You mean you could have said that car looked awesome?
I like your car, bro.
Yeah, your car. Sick car, bro. You literally took 10 words, condensed into 3 words, and a comma. If you're an Oxford guy.
Yeah, right.
Don't
be too pretentious. Is that what it was? You felt like your writing was very pretentious?
No, I wanted to write.
Are you pretentious for doing a podcast?
Yes. No, I wanted to write like the other big writers were writing.
Okay.
And sometimes
I feel like doing any type of media, sometimes I feel like this could almost be another podcast on itself, but sometimes I feel like if you do media stuff where you put yourself out
there, that could be an ego.
I think that there is a little bit of narcissism or what's the P word I just used? Ah, shit.
P word?
Yeah.
Pretentious.
Yeah. I think there's got to be a hint of that somewhere. I think you can be humble.
There's the idea of self-importance.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
And we may have some bit of that for doing this.
I've been doing this for 10 years.
You're an asshole.
I am an asshole. I'm definitely an asshole.
This is fun, though.
No, it's totally
fun. But anyway, damn it, you were going to say something. Mm-hmm. Or I was going to say
something. You were going to say something. Well, we're almost coming up on an hour.
What that's not what it was. What were you talking about? What was it?
I don't know.
We were talking about... Oh, your writing. You were going to say. I was asking you about your articles. Oh,
well, I wanted to write like the guys who are already popular, and I fucked that up. I was like,
no. How? No, but what were they like?
So they were all about the big Dilla Bangs and big, the exciting moments, all caps, you know, counting out the pinfalls and stuff like that. You know, it's just bad.
How would you do it differently?
I was just written about the match like I wrote about sports. Did you up for your nap?
She just ate dinner.
Oh, Baba, come here.
It's her bath time.
Oh, bath time for Baba. All right.
Dad is Joe.
Yeah, that's kind of perfect timing because
we're about to end this.
We're an hour. Yeah. Baba, come here. Baba Ganoush. Come say.
You can get her to say up or something.
Ah, Baba. Can you say, hey, what does the puppy say? what else does the owl say? There you go. Woo. Can you say up? Up. There you go. Here's a microphone. Say hello.
Right, what the fishy say?
Where's the microphone? That works too. Alright, let's see if we can get this. Oh, what's the puppy say?
It scratches.
Scratch. Okay. Anyway. But that's dope.
Yeah.
And I think you should post those.
Oh, God. They're so horrible. 19, 20-year-old Tim writing about pro wrestling in a way that makes me feel bad for myself. So bad. So bad for myself. Oh, God.
As if the self-esteem
is
not...
Well, it hit rock bottom with that one. Even Roy laughed. My own goddaughter, my own niece.
That's her thing. She's like, clacking. Maybe she's like, knock up, dog. CM Punk.
Can I get next? Okay. No. All right. Well, we'll call this one a show, and then we'll come back again. I'm done with finals on Monday, so
cool.
I'm down to do another show.
Maybe we can do one tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boop, boop.
But thank you for joining us, Baba.
You were a great person for the start and the end. Oh, sneeze.
Very nice. So, all right.
But thanks. You can subscribe on iTunes or listen online at loslivingstonbrothers.com if you can't subscribe via iTunes for some reason. And you can check us out also on Facebook. Those are things that we have that we use on a regular basis.
All right.
So. All right.
We are Los Livingston Brothers.
We are Los Livingston Brothers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, bye-bye.